The Running Won't Save You podcast season 3 is proudly sponsored by our friends, the Pick and Mix Ninjas at X Miles. How exactly is it possible to get 150 grams of carbs into your body without having a trail accident, I hear you ask? Well, I can't help you there, but what I can help you with is calculating what has 150 grams of carbs in it using the X Miles nutrition calculator, which is free on their website. You just go on there and add all the things that you feel like eating into the basket, and it'll tell you exactly how many carbs, how many proteins, how many sugars, how many calories, how many this, how many that in the nutrition calculator. It is honestly super, super handy and stops you having to read those tiny, tiny little bits of writing on the back of things. So, this season, our wonderful friends at X Miles, I keep referring to them as our wonderful friends, I don't even know if they like me, are giving us a 12-month subscription to X Plus, which is their membership platform, where customers can receive better pricing on single serves, free priority shipping, express order fulfillment, and 5% store credit whenever they go shopping, plus access to exclusive sales. They're giving us a 12-month subscription plus a nutrition bundle, which is a mystery bundle, like a tin of mystery meat in Lidl. This is a mystery bundle of nutrition. If you want to enter the competition, you can go to our Instagram page, which is Running Won't Save You Pod on Instagram. Click and enter the competition. This competition is running till the end of June. Or if you just want to go on there and order some Vela Forte, Tailwinds, Squirrel's Nut Butter, Active Root, High Five, Low Five, Medium Five, whatever five it is that you want to order, whatever food it is you want to order, whatever nutrition it is you're looking for, then head to the website, put it all into the nutrition calculator, put it all in your basket, and enter the code RWSY1010 at the checkout for 10% off. Thanks, guys. We love you. You're amazing. Honestly, I've probably used X Miles more than any other website in the last sort of 10 weeks prepping for the spine. It's great. It's quick. It's easy. And it is cheap. On with the podcast. Welcome to the Running Won't Save You podcast, episode 8, season 3. Just flip that around because I forgot what I was saying. Me, you're one of your hosts, Ali Bailey, and then the one that people like the most,
Kirsty Reed.
She's fresh, she's new, she's coming straight out of Europe. She's got
fresh is something that's rarely the way I describe myself.
She's got a fucking gilet. That's gonna make quite a good rap. Nice gilet. Where'd you get that from?
Oh, thanks, mate. I did Grand Trail Cormier just over a week ago.
Sure.
The 55k, not the 100k.
Ah.
Trying to normalise the sub-ultra distance. Well, not sub-ultra, but only just ultra distance.
Well, that must be easy for you, Kirsty.
Yeah, 4,000 metres of climb is always easy.
I love it when people say that. Oh, that must be easy for you.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot. No, but I am a big fan of like the 50k, 50 miler, etc., where you start in the light, finish in the light, then get to go to dinner. Then
in the night.
go to bed, go to your own bed,
mm-hmm.
Not run through two nights. So yeah, a lot to be said for it.
4,000 metres in 50,
yeah, it was a bit,
in 55k.
Yeah. Bit less than that, yeah. Yeah, it's an absolute banger of a route. I really recommend it. There's a 30k as well, and it's like quite small. I think there's like 500 people in my race. You do a bit of the tour route. So the 30k, I think, does the last bit of the tour.
Mm-hmm.
And then you when you come back, you do on the 50k, you do a bit of the TMB route. You're up over kind of 2,500 metres for like most of it. It's honestly, it's stunning. Absolutely beautiful. Highly recommend. Great event.
Great. How did you feel?
It was a weird one for me because, as you know, I had quite a big fall over a couple of weeks.
Oh, hell.
10 days. Yeah, 10 days before, I'd fallen over and like hurt my knee. It was quite bruised and quite sort of cut. And so it was kind of suboptimal for sort of bending.
that was when we went on the Via Ferrata, and actually it was suboptimal for bending to a point where I was like, should we be doing this? It's actually quite bad.
So it was just, I had to not run for about a week. I was running with our friend Helen.
Oh, yeah.
And John.
Helen the Monster.
John from Vertebrate, and quite an embarrassing fall over, and then sort of jumped up, went, "Oh no, I'm fine. Everything's fine. It's all okay." And then about half an hour later, fell over again, and it was very much not okay after that. So I did my ankle and my knee, and I'm not complaining about it because we all fall over, don't we?
Yeah, but how
But
is it? Like, because it was really gross. Sorry, it was like loads of. It just looked bad. It looked bad. It looked like bad.
yeah. It was just sore. It was just really sore. So like, I had to take a week off running, and then so my word for the day when I was doing Grand Tour Alcomia was ginger.
What does that mean? That sounds like a warning, and we know what I mean by a warning, don't we?
I was running downhill very gingerly because it was quite sore, and like, I literally my one objective was don't fall over, because if I fell over, it was really, really, really going to hurt. And it actually made it quite a nice day out because I was no pressure. Yeah, just didn't kind of force myself to kind of, run downhill faster than I wanted to or faster than I could. So yeah, it was
And
a
you
nice
did it,
day
and you
out.
didn't fall over.
I didn't fall over.
Success, everyone.
It was, yeah, no, but
Success.
genuinely, it was quite nice just to have one very, very simple objective and then just
Cool.
achieve the objective. And it actually went all right. It was like no drama. It was very hot, obviously, but like I'm getting sick of everyone moaning about it being very hot, so I'm not going to do that.
I quite like it. I
Yeah,
think I
I don't
probably
mind.
moaned about it on this podcast, but I actually do quite like it, and I think we should all just hold on to it and remember what it's going to be like in November, December, January, February, March, April, May next year. Where it goes back
Yeah,
to normal again.
agree. Or the whole year through if you live in the lakes. But
Exactly.
yeah, no, there's been a lot of that on social media of like people making excuses because it's hot. I don't mean like, making excuses, but like people's race results saying, oh, that this went badly because of heat or whatever. And I kind of think, well, it's hot for everybody. It's just, you're
Yeah, and
not running
also
around in like,
part of the whole fucking shebang of being a runner is dealing with problem solving. It's not just about going running, it's about problem solving and managing yourself and like being like, okay, this thing that's out of my control has changed. What is in my control? I'm going to make that work. I watched Julius's partner Susan do race to the car foam warehouse in that boiling heat. She's not very experienced, she absolutely smashed it. I watched three of my athletes do car foam warehouse in the heat. They absolutely smashed it. Like they just what they'd done the training, they just pulled their expectations down a little bit. But I think there's certain people that don't do the fucking work, and any excuse they can grab hold of, they're like, yeah, perfect, that's a perfect excuse. Why don't you just fucking admit that you don't actually like running and you're only doing it for views?
Yeah, no, race for the car foam warehouse was quite an interesting one, I thought. There's quite a few people who dropped out of that because of the heat and stuff. And then they were kind of going on Instagram saying, I saw somebody say, I didn't get the day I deserved. And I was like,
My little
wow,
Lord
that's
Fauntleroy.
but it's so entitled, isn't it? And I wonder whether that's some of it. It's like you kind of get used to, you're young, you're really good at running, you're winning all this stuff, you're doing really well, and then you get a day that's really challenging that we all get in like lots of different ways, and then you just still feel quite entitled. Whereas, as you said, I think you've hit the nail on the head, that it's all about expectations, and like you have to say, like, even elite runners will be running their easy runs at like 1 to 2 minutes per mile slower, won't they? And like, you don't go and do the Olympic marathon in Athens and expect them to break the world record, do you? You think,
No.
oh, it's like 40 degrees, it's like the core of the fucking earth.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be a slow marathon. So why, I don't know why everybody can't just like, yeah, adjust their expectations, but
I
there you go.
didn't get the day I deserved. Fuck me. Like, who
I think
are
you always
you?
get the day you
Elon
deserve. I
Musk.
was thinking about this, like, I don't know if I'm being unreasonable, but I think you always like running. It's a social activity, but it's an individual sport, isn't it? So it's like you literally, that's what I like about it. The work you put into it, you literally get that out of it. So if I did loads and loads and loads of training and then went to do a race, then I would think, yes, I've trained well for this. Whereas for Grand Trail Courmayeur, I'd had like a month of really interrupted training through various things, and I knew that I wasn't, I knew that I had to just really manage my expectations. So, yeah.
It, that I deserve this is really interesting. Like, maybe it comes with experience, because maybe at the start, and I see what people mean. I remember training for London Marathon back in the day, and I remember doing all those runs in the sleet and the rain and the hail, and then on the day it being like 35 degrees, and me being like, this is really, I'm getting a little mark from my phone holder on my arm. And some fucking St. John's ambulance man, when I asked for Vaseline, gave me baby oil because they'd run out of Vaseline, and so I threw it like under my arms, and basically it acted like a sort of basting thing, and I ended up burning really like a turkey in an oven. But yeah, that
I remember thinking, this isn't fair. Like, I've trained really hard for this, and this heat is making me slower. This isn't fair. I'm not going to get my sub four. But the thing is, with running, isn't fair, is it? And it tests your problem solving ability. So, and I think that's half the thrill. Like, I haven't looked at the weather for Lakeland yet, right? But the thrill is, like, is it gonna? Are they gonna boil stuff? Is it gonna piss down? Are they gonna be skidding down? Are they gonna be skidding down towards Mardow Head? Everybody flying sideways at the ferns? Are they gonna be like? But the thing is, people have trained to do 100 or 50 miles, and it's the problem solving bit that is the next sort of level, isn't it? That I think that really does separate. Almost maybe it separates people that absolutely fucking love the sport from the people that are kind of on the surface of it or are still dipping their toe in, because I think the problem solving is the best bit. I really think it is. I think it's the most fun bit. It's like, what's going to happen now? Just moving forward is moving forward. Being fit to move forward is moving forward. But having rain, wind, hail, you know, when you did Tour de Géant, you literally got everything you could possibly get, and you were having to constantly like change pace, change what you're wearing, change where you're going to stop, change what you're eating, because you've got like these weather systems following you around, and so you just don't know. Like, you got into Donass, it was fucking boiling, and then you get up to the top of those mountains, and you've got a fucking four layers on. So I think
It'll
that's
be the
what
same at
I.
Lakeland. Like after I've done like five Lakelands, I think, and you literally get a bit of everything. You'll get a bit of sun, you'll get a bit of rain, you'll get a bit of wind, you'll be at, like you say, you'll be at Mardow Head and feel like you're on the edge of sky or something. It's interesting, isn't it? Keep it interesting, and there's so many things to juggle, aren't there? But like someone said to me as well, the person who told me about the Race to the Stones kind of stuff was, they said, for every person who's complaining about the heat, there's Dan Lawson, he's smashing the Southwest Coast Pass record and like absolutely loving it. And he, but I think that that's kind of quite telling, isn't it? Because I mean, obviously Dan's like solar powered, isn't he? But he loves the sport. He doesn't crave the attention. He doesn't, post the shit out of Instagram. He's not, look at me, look at me. He's very much like, I love this. I run with joy. I'm grateful for it. And maybe that's the difference, that he just gets his head down and gets on with it. Whereas other people are kind of, moaning about why they didn't get the time or the result they deserved. And also, I think that's, I mean, this might just be me, but I think, like for inclusivity, if you've got thousands and thousands of followers, if you're posting about why you didn't win, is, I don't know, I just like, is that interesting to people that follow you that, probably not going to win? The thing I like about running is like we're all in it together, and it's like when you meet the elites, like the really nice people, the first thing they'll say to you is, "Oh, how was your race?" And they're really interested in it. It's like, "Oh yeah, that bit. Oh, that was really hard, whatever." Whereas I think some people are a bit like, I'm better than you. I'm a bit better than you. And if I can't win, then I don't feel like I'm better than you. So I don't really enjoy the feeling. I'm probably being really unfair there.
No, I don't think you are, but I also think that there's this thing about results, about like, this is the result I deserve, and it's like, I don't know where this deserving thing comes from. Where do you think the deserving thing comes? Because it's like, you will get the result you deserve. You'll get
I totally
your
agree.
outcome will be a result of the effort and what that you've put in, plus the uncontrollables. Because there's lots of uncontrollables, and you will get what you have worked for, taking all those things into account. That's how the universe works. Like, the universe isn't out to get you, and the weather's not out to get you. Like, and I th honestly think it's, and a lot, I say to athletes all the time, if in order to get a good 100-mile result, and let's look at 100 miles as sort of the benchmark of like, it's about just above 50, it's that sort of, oh, I don't know if I can do it. You have to have everything, all your ducks in a row. It's 50% what's in your control and 50% stuff that's out of your control, which is no point in thinking about. You just have to be prepared for the things that are out of your control, which is mainly weather. Like, it's mainly weather, really, isn't it? That's kind of the thing. What's all the aids, the fact that the aid stations won't have the things you want on them, the other people that are going to be there, the traffic on the way to the race, all that stuff. Like, that's out of your control, but you have to be able to respond to it well. That's the problem-solving aspect of it. And in order to get the result that you want, or the result you've gone, I want a sub 24, the universe has to play ball and you have to play ball. And if either of those things isn't working, you'll get a different result, but it will be the result that you deserve.
It will always be
It will always be the result that you deserve.
the
And that's how you can go for it. But I have a plethora of athletes who come to
result
me.
you deserve.
Thank you. Who come to me having not finished hundreds. And sorry, everybody, again, usually they're men and they just can't get over the 100K mark. And I get them to like do a lot of work on mindset. And it's always the same thing that they say to me. My mind went, but my body didn't. And I was fit enough to finish the race. No, you weren't. You weren't. I was strong enough to finish, but my brain went, no, you weren't. You weren't strong enough to finish because you didn't finish. Right? That was the result that you deserved because your brain is part of your body. What part of that don't we understand? Your brain isn't separate. Mentally, I lost it, but physically, I was fit. Well, no, you weren't fit, physically fit, because you couldn't finish. So you need to accept that. Stop making excuses and saying, if I just sort my brain out, because your brain is part of your body. And we need to work on the two of them working together as one. It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating why people can't just go, I didn't finish, didn't get the result I wanted, but I'm going to go back, look at everything, do the work, try again. And if I don't finish this time, that's okay as well. I'll try again. If I don't finish that time, that's okay as well. I'll try again. That acceptance just takes the weight off your shoulders, doesn't it? Because there's this whole fucking thing about finishing 100. Nothing changes when you finish 100.
No. Oh, something interesting to do with that actually was I don't know whether you saw it in the news. Like I've got no interest in golf. I'm just going to assume you don't have a lot of interest in
No, but I've
golf.
got a big interest in my friend Brad Stulberg. And he
Exactly.
keeps talking about the golf guy.
Scottie Scheffler is it?
Fucking love him.
Yeah, and I saw that in Brad Stulberg's newsletter, and it's called The Biggest Success Trap and How We Overcome It. And he's talking about, as you talk about, is it the arrival fallacy? Yeah. And he said, I pulled out a quote. So this golfer, he won some massive PGA tournament or Masters or whatever it was, something like that. And he said, it's not fulfilling. He sat at the press conference and said, it's not fulfilling. It's fulfilling from the sense of accomplishment, but winning is not fulfilling from the deepest places of your heart. It feels like you work your whole life to celebrate winning a tournament for like a few minutes. It only lasts a few minutes. And he talks about how he gets like how his deep kind of satisfaction comes from all the work he puts in. And I really like that. It's really relatable, isn't it?
And basically the sporting world went mad. Or like he's lost it. Like he's fucking gone mental. He's never gonna win. This is an absolute like this is ridiculous. And then what did he do at the weekend?
Won again.
Yeah, went one.
Was fulfilled for 3 minutes,
Yeah, went
went
one.
home and enjoyed being a father and
Knocked that little
a
ball into the
husband.
hole, did a big sigh, went looked at the floor, or went home. With a check for about $50 million, I imagine, because fucking there's so much fucking money in golf. But yeah, that was the best bit about it was that he did this press conference where he basically said it wasn't fulfilling, and everybody was like that he's gone mad. But Brad was like, yes, look, he's literally saying everything that I've been fucking saying. This arrival fallacy, basically, the arrival fallacy for those people that are listening who have not heard of it is this idea that when you achieve some sort of goal, something's going to change. You're going to be happier, you're going to be more fulfilled, you're going to feel content. But actually, because of the way that our brains are built, you're just going to look to the next thing, then you're going to look to the next thing, then you're going to look to the next thing. We can't help doing it. We just can't help it. It's the way that our brains are wired. And because of the fact that we still got brains, the brains of cavemen, the problem is. The world has moved on much quicker than our brains have been able to develop. So we don't, our brains are still living in the no phone world. They're living in the,
Oh, that'd be amazing.
living in a fucking cave world. They haven't caught up with this idea that we can get instant gratification every fucking minute of every day and dopamine hits by just scrolling through our phone. So it's gone nuts. And now this arrival fallacy has got bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where, people are going and getting ridiculous amounts of stuff injected into their faces. People are going to get injections to make themselves thinner because they think it's going to make them happier. The quicker they can get to the goal, the quicker they think they're going to be happier. But the fact is, and I've said this so many times, you will just be the winner of a PGA tournament who's fucking depressed. That's what you'll be. You will just be a miserable asshole with a 100-mile buckle because you're not doing the work or making yourself content, your values and what's important to you. And so I think that what this dude. What's his name? Scheifler.
Scottie Chef
Scotty Scheffler. Scotty
Scheffler.
Scheffler. He is exactly fucking right. And if you ignore, and honestly, listener, next time you do a race, do not think about the result. Because I can guarantee you're going to get a result, but I can't guarantee what it's going to be. But you will get one. Don't think about it. If you can be in the moment of what you're doing and be in the be joyful in what you're doing and be absolute, try and be and try and master that craft, try and master how you feel, try and master like that. Always, you know, when you enter that sort of, I'm just jogging along the trails having a fucking great time, like looking at how lovely everything is, it's raining and I feel amazing. If you can master being in that moment, you will get a result that you're pleased with. Doesn't really matter what that result is, but you will feel pleased with it. So yeah.
I from another different sport that's not running. Look at us. We're really diversifying, aren't we? I'm really proud of us.
100% diverse, 100% diverse.
No,
Woke. We should call this the Woke podcast. Because
but
we
all we
include
talk
other
about,
sports,
but
so
runners
we're
just
so
talk about
woke.
running, don't they? I don't know whether you followed the Welsh football. I know you're kind of part Welsh.
Big Wrexham fan. I love Wrexham.
So women's football, Euros.
Oh yeah.
I heard an interview with their manager called Rhiann Wilkinson, and she said her definite, because obviously the Welsh team were not going to win, and they're kind of like, but they're really kind of developing at the moment, and this was kind of like a development tournament for them, and everyone's like, oh yeah, but you're going to just go out in the group stage. And she said success is putting in a performance we're proud of. And I really like that, because it's like every one of us can say that, can't we? Like every race that we do. And then her philosophy is kind of performance over results. Her mantra underscores the belief that the results matter, the manner in which the team plays is paramount. Which I really like that. That's a really kind of values-based, approach, isn't it? And it's like a long-term approach, and it's, it isn't just about, like, football is obviously just about winning and losing matches, isn't it? Like, you literally got to score another goal than that person does. But like, when you break it down like that, I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, me too. And do you know what would be really great? If everybody listening to this podcast could experience winning a race. Because once you've done that, once you've experienced that, whether it's at school, whether it's at college, whether it's uni, whether it's a race, whether it's like the race to the Carphone Warehouse, once you've won it, you can see what we're fucking talking about. I'm sure that you need to be, you need to have that experience to understand it doesn't change anything, and actually you are not a different person, and it hasn't, it doesn't, just doesn't fucking change anything. It is a fallacy, it's a fucking lie that if you are the best, deemed the fastest, or you have come first, things will change. They won't. Like in some sport you might win a lot of money, but also winning a lot of money doesn't make you happy. In fact, winning a lot of money can make more problems than it can solve. But
That's what Notorious B.I.G. said, isn't it?
he said, "No money, no problems."
Ah, yeah.
The philosopher, the great philosopher, Notorious B.I.G. said,
I quickly Google him to check he hasn't been me too?
"He's dead." So,
Yeah,
yeah,
but like, posthumously me
he was
too.
best friends with P. Diddy, so I'm pretty sure that he's probably been
Shit.
me too. But
But
anyway,
probably we'll get the lawyer.
no money, no problems.
Yeah,
No, that's
yeah.
nothing to do with Mo Farah, just in case anybody's wondering. But yeah, that I think when you have success in the sort of societal way, you actually do understand that performance over results thing. Like your best
Yeah.
race result, your best, when you think about your best race result that you got, and when I'm talking about result, I mean like the one where you're like, I'm really proud of that. Was it the
Yeah.
performance, or was it where you came in the table that was important?
I couldn't tell you where I came in the tour, and I have no interest in looking. But that's the thing that I'm most proud of, because I put an enormous amount of work into that, and I obviously it was very hard, and there were lots and lots of things that could have sort of, stopped it along the way, and I sort of overcame all of them. And I was absolutely terrified at the end on Malatra. So that's the thing I'm most proud of. Yeah, definitely. And it's got nothing to do with result.
No, that's it. Got a little treat for you now. We're gonna whack in. I crewed my sister at the weekend. I went down to Wales. I fucking live in Wales, don't I? I actually pretty much do live in Wales. And I'm crewed on the Dragon 100, and I wanted to get her on because I wanted to you to hear it from her, because what I it's we are so, me and Kirsty and Holly and Damien are so in this fucking world that we kind of don't bat an eyelid when people achieve things. But my sister is a normal woman. She's just like, she's not us. She's not in fucking in the sport. Do you know what I mean? She's not writing about the sport. She's not interviewing people in the sport. She's a normal fucking woman. She's 55 years old. She's got three kids. She works for the Welsh Rugby people. She's got a really hardcore job. She lives by herself and she has finished her first 100 miler. And I just wanted people to listen to this interview, very quick interview with her, because I want especially women to take some inspiration from this because I think it's incredible. So this is me and Kirsty talking to my sister. Enjoy. Welcome to the podcast. Special guest, don't you? Special guest. Well done, Janie. You're a special guest. Janie Wise. She finished her first
Thanks.
100 miler on Saturday, one of the days. Yay! People make some noise.
Woo. Woo.
Okay, woo. So, Janie, we wanted to get you on to talk about because what me and you had a conversation about how you trained for. Basically, I said to you, like, I don't know, like 12 hours afterwards, are you going to do another one? Because that's the arsehole thing that people ask. And you were like, I don't know. You know, we had a little chat about the process and stuff. And then as we were talking about it, I was like, I think we need to record this because I can talk to people about how great you are and how inspiring you are and how I think that someone doing something like this for the, well, for the first time at 55, and I know you tried a few years ago, but still, like, to go and actually go through the training process. It sounds like I'll take it like I'm being mean. When I say at your age, I mean I have loads of athletes in their 40s, so like I can't, it's too late, I can't do that. I'm not a natural runner. So I just wanted to get you on to maybe talk to us about what that was like in reality and share some inspiration for a nation.
Okay, yeah, they're more than happy to talk about that. It was, yeah, I was still processing it though, to be fair. So some of what I was saying might not make a lot of sense, but yeah, no, it was incredible. It was such a brilliant experience, and obviously, I feel like I had a slightly unfair advantage because I had you crewing me, but you didn't shout at me very much. So, but yeah, no,
No, I
it was
didn't.
mad.
But so tell us about the first time, your first go, and what was different this time?
Okay, so first time I did it, I think. Yeah, I signed up for the Autumn 100 and I was kind of doing it because I felt like I should do it because I'd done a few 100 kilometers, 100 miles is the next normal thing to do. So I signed up for it and I think.
Let's just say that take a moment there. 100 miles is the next normal thing to do. Brilliant.
It's on the list, isn't it? Where'd you go from 100? Yeah, it's the next logical thing from a runner's brain. And remember chatting to you about it, and you said, "Oh, I could put a plan together." So you put a plan together for me, and I kind of left it on the side and looked at it a bit, did a few of the runs, then started panicking, then signed up for a 50 miler. I think it was the Edam, the notorious Edam, where I went the wrong way, turned up late, went the wrong way at the start line. Anyway, cut a long story short, I did that. Thought, okay, I've done 50 miles again, I'll be fine, and. Yeah, rocked up to the start line thinking, I'm not sure I can do this, and then manifested not doing it. So, yeah, it was shocking because it's a big old commitment to do 100 miles and to turn up at the start line not being 100% confident that you can do it. For me, wasn't the right thing to do. So, yeah, post that, my running took a bit of a slump, didn't it? I didn't do loads. I was doing my normal kind of going out for a few miles every week. And then, yeah, I saw some people doing the run that I've just done. So the Dragon 100 Ultra, it goes through Swansea, and I saw a couple of women running it. It's about, I don't know, 8 o'clock one night, and I just thought to myself, I want to do that. I really, really want to do it. And then signed up for it.
Can I ask what well, firstly, just want to say congratulations, and also, the first time I met you was at the Autumn 100, the year that you did that, and you were literally sitting on a chair in your pants because you'd got like halfway through getting changed and lost interest in it, and staring into space. So,
Was that before or after she licked the bit of pasta and then was sick because she'd licked a bit of pasta?
The best bit of that was Ali's reaction when I ran into the checkpoint at 50 miles and I'd been in it was 12 hours. And I won't say the expletive that she said, but it was like, what the hell are you doing
Think the
here?
words were, what the fuck are you doing here?
Yeah, I think it was that, exactly that. And then at that point, I was thinking, oh no, and I feel really sick. What the hell am I going to do now?
And now you realise that's just totally normal.
Yep.
I want to know what changed in your mindset because you said you stood on the start line of the Autumn 100 thinking you can't do it. Did you stand on the start line of the Dragon 100 thinking I can do it? And if so, what work did you do to change your mindset in between?
Yeah, so yeah, the mindset was completely different when I stood on the start line this time. And in the week running up to it, everybody kept saying to me, oh, how are you feeling? And I was like, actually feel fine because I knew that I'd done the work to get there. So I'd got about September last year. I'd been chatting to somebody at the running club that I go to, Laura, and she'd got a coach, and she was thinking about doing a 100 miler as well. We got chatting, and she was talking about her coach, and so I thought, you know what, I'm going to invest in having a coach, not put any pressure on Ali. I'm going to get a different coach, and I'm going to put the effort in. So yeah, so I signed up with Mike. He gave me a plan, and I followed the plan, and I, you know, worked with Laura. We recce'd the whole course. That was one of the things that made it a lot easier from the point of view of I knew what I was going to be doing. So we recce'd the course, we did some training together. And so by the time I stood on the start line this time, I was thinking, I have literally done all the work to do this. So, you know, this is ultimately it's an experiment to see if my body's going to be able to do it. But I know I've done, you know, I've done all the runs and also strength training, because I'd never done that before. Even though I do a lot of yoga, I'd never done strength training, and that was a bit of a struggle actually, because when I was first doing it, I thought, this is so boring, why am I doing this? And I put it to the bottom of the list thinking this is pointless. And then the further through the training plan I got, the more I thought, oh my God, this is making such a massive difference. And if there was a run, if it was a choice between doing the strength training or doing a run, then I did the strength training.
It's not like you did the Ultra 100 and were like, oh, that was terrible, and then spent like 3 years getting ready. Like you had that, like it was almost like a break. I felt like Ultra 100 punched you in the tits. You were like, fuck that, I just don't want to do that anymore. I'm not interested in this anymore. And then it was sort of, you sort of did little bits and bobs. But then when you got really focused on the dragon, you were like for 9 months, you were in like a 9 month proper block, weren't you, where you were really, really focused on what you were doing. And I'll be honest, because I'd seen you before, I was like, she's not going to stick with that. But you fucking well did. And I think that's the bit that's most, that's the bit that I'm like, this is a real life case study, because I have so many people that are like, I don't have time. So in reality, as someone that works, has a pretty hardcore job, has got three kids, has a house, has to deal with everything by yourself, is single, like has a life, how much of your life did this impact, did the training impact? Because a lot of people say to me, I don't have the time to dedicate to it.
I think I just got creative with it. So it did, I'm not going to lie, it did take up a lot of time, but you get into the mindset of, you know, you're doing the work so that you can finish the event that you signed up for. You know, my kind of what does success look like for me was finishing it within the cutoff and being able to cross the line without slumping on the floor and you know, and feeling good. And that's exactly what I managed to do. And it's, you know, it was, I followed the plan basically that the coach had given me, and he asked me, you know, what's your lifestyle like? What, how do we need to adapt this? And, you know, when I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go and do a 10 mile run, and it was pissing with rain outside, I just thought to myself, okay, this is mile 85. So it's mile 85. You're feeling like absolute crap. We're really tired, like you are now, and you just get out and do it. So I just, yeah, just cracked on with it, and kind of was a bit creative around things like combining long, like double run days. So obviously got to take Reggie out for a walk. Reggie's not the greatest runner, but I'd go out,
Reggie's
do
a dog,
five.
guys. Reggie's not a human. I've seen it. Reggie's not a small boy that lives in a house.
Yeah, so I'd go out and do like a job of 5 miles with Reggie, come back to the house, drop Reggie off, and then go out and do another 5 miles. And was it tempting to come back in the house and go, oh, I'll bend that off? Yes. But again, went back into, okay, this is mile 90, and just get on, crack on and do it. And the more I did it, the more I started to enjoy it, and the more my confidence came up with, actually, if I do this work, I'm going to finish this race. And lo and behold, I did. And I was still, like I say, because it was only the day before yesterday, whenever it was that I finished. I just, yeah, so proud of myself that I actually managed to finish it.
What was the why behind it? Like, what, there has to be a pretty fucking strong why to get to 100 miles, like to do that training. Like, what was the why behind it? Was it just like sheer fuck you brain, I'm gonna get this done? Or was there something else there? What did you expect to feel at the end of it?
It's the feeling of accomplishment. It was like, I want to do this because I want to do it for me. And I've always, every time I've done any long runs, you know, you talk to people about it and they're like, oh my God, how the hell did you manage to do that? And you think to yourself, yeah, how the hell did I manage to do that? And it's that, yeah, that feeling of sort of almost invincibility, where you're like, this is what I'm actually capable of. And now when I tell people that I've run 100 miles, after they've like frowned at me a lot, looked confused, they're like, wow. So yeah, it's just the sense of achievement and pushing the limits. And yeah, I am 55 and it's the first time that I've run 100 miles, so yeah, that's what it was.
Do you think?
Oh, sorry, go on,
Sorry,
Kirsty.
I was just going to say that there seem to be for women in particular, not so much for men, like a lot of barriers almost put there by society when you're in your 50s. You like people say to me, like, like you say, oh, run 100 miles. What? Do you think? I mean, do you think those barriers are real, or do you think they're all in people's minds? And do you think you've kind of found a way of kind of, do you think there'll be other areas of in your life where you just sort of think, fuck you, I'm not using age as an excuse anymore, I can run 100 miles?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Because it is. It's like, the first one was my dad was kind of like, "Oh no, you don't want to do that to yourself. Why would you do that?" And then, yeah, it's just, there's a lot of younger people I find now that are doing more and more of the longer distance runs. There's still, people my age as well, but I don't feel like there's no limits. Being 55. When my mum was 55, I used to think, "Oh my God, she's really old." But now it's literally just a number, isn't it? And I feel like I'm kind of, as we were talking about the Wild Horse 200, weren't we, Ali? And I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll do that. And I'm still not 100% convinced that I will do something like that. But you
I
kind of
think
feel like the
usually
barriers have
it
been.
takes about a week before you are 100% convinced, yeah.
Yeah, but I do feel like there are no limits now, because if I can do that, then what the hell else can I do?
Exactly. And I think we need to normalize it, don't we? It's like I went into a running shop the other day and these two young lads looked at me and they were like, what do you want trainers for? Oh no, those are more for like running ultras. And I was like, yeah, I do run ultras. But I think, yeah, I just think we need to normalize it, don't we? It's like I did a Grand Trail Cormier last weekend, and I'd be really surprised like if there wasn't anyone who was 50 in Cormier who didn't do that race. You know what I mean? It's just like a totally normal thing to do when you live in the mountains, that you're really active and you're out skiing, hiking, etc. Whereas here, I think it's a bit more like, my knees.
No, absolutely. It's like, oh, my hip hurts, my knees hurt. And that's one thing about the strength training, because I'd had quite a lot of problems with my hip, and I ended up having x-rays and an MRI scan and all sorts. And it was like, well, actually there's nothing wrong with it. And then started doing strength training, and my feet are still quite sore after the weekend. My hip's absolutely fine, and that is 100% down to the strength training.
It was quite interesting what happened, because Janie got a lot of, you look so fresh. In fact, that was the thing that was said the most. Most people were like, you look so fresh. And she did look pretty fresh, but it was like a surprise, like she shouldn't look fresh. But there were a lot of young bucks, I forgot to call them, on that route, weren't there? And at one point, and James Elson said this to me as well, he said, when you're doing a 200, you, w women, men will be gravitating towards you if you're looking strong, because they basically feel like that's your mummy, and they're that woman, that strong woman in front of you will look after you, right? Like feed a fish. And when you came into McDonald's down that dual carriageway, you had three guys just following you, like in the street, and they were young. And I felt like there was quite a lot of that. You said you saw quite a lot of that, didn't you? Quite a lot of like the guys who were like trying to cling on to like the strong women in the front, and the difference in behavior between the male competitors and the female competitors was really interesting, like a lot of dramatics. Whereas you just saw the women getting on with it. There was like 10 women and like 50 blokes, weren't there, at the start? Like, what was your experience that while you were out?
Yeah, no, exactly like you say. It was, they'd start running along with you. They'd look at you, and you could see them trying to work out how old you were. And then you'd have a chat with them, and then they'd stick with you for a while. And there was a lot of men that were kind of going off the course. So, and they'd turn around and look at you. You were going in a different direction. They'd be like, "Oh, is it that way? Yeah, that's it. You see your watch with the map on it. That's what you're supposed to follow. The one you downloaded." So there's a lot of that going on. And I know chatting to Laura, she was a bit quicker than me and went off. And she said the section through the forest in the night, I think she was like the Pied Piper. She rounded up a good few men who were like, had got lost, were coming out of the bushes. And so there's definitely that. And also going into the checkpoints as well. You go into the checkpoints, and it was a bit like the Somme. There were loads of men laying on their back with their legs up on chairs, and the women were just kind of getting something to eat and a cup of tea.
I
So
honestly
yeah.
feel like this is, especially when you're at our age. I say our age, I mean like in the sort of the scoop of 40 to 50 to 60 age, where you've been told just to fucking get on with it. Don't moan, don't say anything. Yeah, if you've got nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. Don't moan, just get on with it. Honestly, that is, it's, it, I think it's a generational thing. I think we'll see. There's a lot of young boys coming up. There's a lot of young, really young people, like in their 20s, doing 100 milers, which I think is just mad and amazing. But I think we will see a change there. But I think the I'm exactly the same when I've watched checkpoints. I've seen women really honestly just getting on with it. And it's, the people laying on the floor, rolling around, are the blokes. And this is not me saying men are better than women are better than men. It's just an observation on how, on the different behaviours between the sexes. So before you start writing in or telling us that we're a bunch of, what are they called? The women that hate the men?
Feminists.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. There's another one. Andrew Tate's got a different word. So I'm gonna, Janie, you're sweating. I'm gonna let you go get
I
that long sleeved top off, which I don't think was the best choice for today. I think it's gonna have to be
it
the best
definitely
for today.
wasn't.
But I would, yeah, I wanted to get you on because I wanted it to come out, to come from your mouth, and for people to understand. On my Instagram, there's a post. There's loads of pictures. I'm gonna put a reel. I'll put a reel together of all the stories. It was an absolute pleasure, and there was no moaning, and there was no dramatics, and there was even at the end, you just came in and everything was fine. Oh, apart from throwing up the M4, but we won't talk about that. But you did such a great job, and so I wanted you to come on to it because I know you've got a lot of female listeners who take a lot of inspiration from Kirsty and from Holly, and you, so you're in that bucket as well. And well done,
Thank you.
congrats! I've got your buckle. It's here in my house. It's in
Great.
my
Yeah,
kit
thanks for
bricks. That's okay.
that.
I didn't take it. Your daughter put it in my kit bricks. For those with me. But I'll speak to you later. I love you. Bye.
Okay. All right. Love you.
Congrats.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
I'm so proud of her, Kirsty.
She's amazing, honestly. I'm proud of her on your behalf. She's my hero. She's my absolute hero.
It's not like she's come from a bat sporty background or anything like that. She's literally done it from scratch. She started running ultras before I did, but she's not done she hasn't done the addict thing of accelerating at a rate of knots. She's actually been a bit more sensible than I have, and she's done it almost out of like joy rather than out of necessity.
Yeah.
And yeah, and she finds it, she like me, she finds it fucking hard, and she has to work really hard. And I just want any women out there, especially women and men, who are like, I can't, I'm too old, it's too late, just to fucking realize that if you do invest in your body and invest in your mind and invest your time in it, you can do it. It's such a massive success. And whether she'd finished it or not doesn't fucking matter. Like, it's great, and she's really thrilled. And she's, well, I've got a buckle because somehow it's ended up in my house, but this morning before we had a chat, I could see that, like, yesterday she was so excited, and so she felt so brilliant about finishing it. And today it started, so you can see the battery going do 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 as it like sort of falls down, because you just get to that point where you're like, now what? Now what? Now I've done it. The praise from everybody sort of starts to go down. Everybody said, well done. Your DMs start to get less. Your comments on your Instagram post start to get less. You realise you have to go back to work and your feet still hurt. And everybody's asking you what's next. The fucking arrival fallacy.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? But at the same time, that's something that she can hang on to forever. And isn't it really? I feel jealous of her to have
Yeah.
something that special. It's like she's achieved her first one. She's done it at 55, which I think is incredible, and it's really inspiring. And also, that's her one, like her 100 miler. Like, we look back and we're like, yeah, 100 miler's no big deal. Like, oh,
Yeah.
we've done this, we've done that, or whatever.
Yeah.
But for her, that's like something she can hang on to forever. Like that day that I ran that.
It's taken me fucking years to get to the point where I can be content after a race. Like, I did it. I managed it after the spine, and I managed it after Law. But you saw me after the Challenger South last year. You were on the phone when I was basically fucking hanging off the cliff of my fingernails, being like, I fucking hate this. And I just felt so shit. And that's what would happen. I'd just fall off a cliff. And I think it's such a waste for to be so to feel like that after races. But it is something that happens. It is, I suffer with depression, and it's it manic it. When your hormones are all over the place and you're exhausted, you can, and you've worked really hard for something and now it's gone, it's finished, you can feel really shit. But I just, yesterday she was so chirpy and like so proud of herself when it's to see her friend Laura. And I just thought, fuck, I wish I'd been like that. But I wasn't. I was just like, what's the next thing? Why didn't I do as well as I wanted to do?
But you might have been like that after the first one. You don't remember.
No, I wasn't, because I was drinking really heavily, and I remember exactly
Oh.
how I felt after the first one. I sat on outside James Ellison's van thinking, like, why hasn't this changed me? Why aren't I different? Why don't I feel
Oh, yeah. I
different?
remember the book now.
Yeah, I wrote a book. It's called There Is No War. It's really good.
You should write another one.
Yeah, I am. I'm trying.
No,
I really hope that was a barbed deadline comment.
it was actually just dropping a little plug in for book
Yeah.
two, actually. You know, I wouldn't do that.
Book deux, which is French book two.
The difficult second book.
Yeah, the difficult second book. It's actually, it's not that, let's not talk about that. It's going to be great, guys. It's great. It's full of great top tips. But yeah, I remember sitting on the floor outside by James Nelson's van, trying not to throw up, just thinking, why don't I feel indifferent? Because I thought by finishing 100 Mile I would feel different, and I didn't feel different. And I'm very grateful I did finish it, because I opened the door to lots of other things. But don't fucking get stuck in the arrival fallacy, bitches. Try and
Yeah.
enjoy the process and be like, what, who is, I want to, enjoy this person that I'm becoming, rather than getting results, because
Yeah.
you've got a long, long life to fill with results. You need to be
Yeah.
enjoying
Well,
yourself while you're doing it.
I think like the theme of today is diversification, because we diversified into a different sport recently, didn't we?
Oh yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Have you had a call? Have you
We
had
did
a
something that scared us.
call up? For the GB team yet?
No,
Oh,
because
I have.
they heard me heavy breathing during the down climbing bit. So we're talking about the Via Ferrata. We went to do the Via Ferrata at Honister with an amazing person called Joe Mosley, who I think was doing a bit of promo for Honister. If people want a fantastic day out, it is an amazing place. And I've got to be honest, it was a lot more terrifying than I ever imagined it would be.
I think it was me and you were both doing that thing where we were pretending not to be scared, but because we know each other
Yeah.
so well, we both knew that each other was fucking terrified. Like,
Yeah.
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 You start asking the instructor really ridiculous questions, like, has anybody died here? What do you do when it's
Yeah.
raining? Is it slippery?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fucking terrifying. But like, were you super proud of yourself after that?
I was quite proud of myself. Yeah. Yeah, and it's good, isn't it? To challenge yourself in different ways. Like we're used to doing doing runs that challenge us either in terms of like, I don't know, how long they are or how technical they are or how many nights you go through or whatever. But it's a totally different kind of challenge, which I really enjoyed.
Me too. It's really interesting holding, clinging on to those rungs, and your brain starts going, rrr, you can hear it whirring up, and then you look down, and the cars are like the size of ants, and your brain's like, you're gonna fall and die. Imagine if you fell and died. Imagine if you, and then it goes into that, the imp of the, what Edgar Allan Poe calls the imp of the perverse, and the imp of the perverse is that thing where your brain goes, do it, just do it, and you know it will end your life, and you know it will really hurt you, but it's telling you to do it anyway. And that's what I have. This is why I've got problems with alcohol. Like, this imp is like, do it, do it, do it. And you have to be like, right, now I'm gonna literally sit, just hold on to this, be in the moment, and just fucking exercise some mind control. And that's what I took from it. It was presenting me with problems that were right in front of me that I could not get out of. I could not get out of it. You can't go, stop everything, please, can you winch me up? That's not gonna happen. You have to walk away from it. You have to walk out of it. And so it was a really good exercise for me in mind control. Because I think we talked about it on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I think people think that I was just a little bit, we were just a little bit scared, and it was fine. But I wasn't a little bit scared, and it wasn't fine. Like, there was one bit where we were like, I was like, this is fucking terrifying. But what is such a great exercise, isn't it?
Yeah, it was really interesting. So I'd done one before, but it was much more like kind of just sideways walking along, like you're almost like walking on a ledge, and it was nowhere near that scary. But this had like bits of down climbing, which is like the most unintuitive movement, isn't it? It's like we started to climb down on a ladder, which was fine, and then you stepped off the ladder, and I was just like, fuck. And then there were bits where you had to kind of like step across. Like we were clipped on with two ropes at all
Yeah, but
times,
if
just
you'd have fucking fallen, you would have been
it would have hurt.
dangling, it would have hurt, you would have smacked your
Yeah.
face on the rock, and then what? Because you would have been like, ooh! And like wriggling, and then everybody else on the line would have been wriggling. JJ, the fucking instructor, is leaping around like a mountain goat somewhere else. I don't know what he's gonna, how he's gonna help. He's only 12. He's gonna do call his dad. It's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, but the scariest bit for me, there was a bit where you had to kind of like, there was a little bit of an overhang and you had to like hang your arms on it and then kind of just blindly like try and find a foothold kind of under an overhang.
Yeah.
Like any climbers listening to this are going to be like, oh my God, it's amateur hour.
Yep.
But yeah, it was I found that just such an unintuitive movement. And I had to just keep reminding myself, like, oh, you're really scared, but actually, it's really rational to be really scared when you're just like on the edge of a drop with
Yeah. It makes me feel a bit
So
sick thinking about it.
I know, but
Tell
we
you
did
what,
it, didn't we?
the promos work. Damien's taking his kids there, but I've told him maybe not to do the extreme version.
Yeah.
Not because of the kids, because of him.
Right,
Because we
right.
did XXXXL
Of
only
course we
for,
did. Of
yeah,
course we
only
did.
for,
And then we realised very quickly that was a massive error.
yeah. The minute that he was like, right, turn around and climb backwards down this ladder. And I'm like, I can't climb backwards out my tent box. So this
Yeah,
is
you should
new
have
for me.
practiced on some bunk beds.
But the best thing was that Jo, she's so lovely. She was so nervous. So me and Kirsty
Yeah.
were channeling all of our energy into Jo. And that was
Yeah.
the perfect distraction, wasn't it? Channeling all our
Yeah,
energy
we were
into Jo.
like, we're not scared. We're not scared. It's fine, Joe. You're doing really well. You're doing really well. And then when Joe elected not to continue, we were like, oh, fuck, who's the weakest out of us
Yeah,
two? Who's
exactly.
going to break first?
He put us at the back. Why do you think he put us at the back? Because we were liabilities. Because if we fell to our deaths, no one else would be able to see.
I was literally a liability. I had a leg that didn't bend,
No.
and I'd literally a liability that day.
So, Via Ferrata, everybody, why not go to Via Ferrata? It's a great day out for the whole family, except the cafe shut early, which I was not happy about.
I don't think
And
it's shut early. I think it just took us so long to
anyway,
do the Via Ferrata.
it takes longer than you think. And also, take fucking snacks because I was starving.
Yeah, you
Mush.
were quite hungry by the end of
Yeah, I
that.
get very hangry. Like at the end of the crewing thing with my sister, we got back to her house and she started talking to me, and I was like, "Stop!" I was like, "I've reached the end now. Reached the end of it. I can't." I said, "I'm about to lose it. About to lose it. Need to go to bed now." So at least I know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, you do have to keep a lid on it though, don't you, when you're crewing other people. You do have to push all of your own thoughts and emotions down and just focus on them.
Yeah, you do, and it is hard. And I was, yeah, and I, yeah, I kind of, I didn't get in. It's not getting in. It's just being really tired. I thought I'd be able to. First off, I thought I'd be able to get my like easy 7 mile run in on the Sunday, and I couldn't because I was just going from pillar to post, like meeting her, going and getting what she wanted, and all that. And that's absolutely fine. But in my head, I had these visions of me sitting in my chair, getting a suntan on the like Welsh coast path, having a really great time. But actually, I was just constantly worried and constantly looking at a tracker and constantly like making sure she was okay. So, absolute props to anybody that does crewing because it is fucking hard work, and the amount of emotional energy that goes into it is mental. Like, just it's just exhausting, isn't it? So, yeah, do you want a question? Have you got any other interesting facts for us?
I've got a, yeah, I have got a few other things, but let's go with questions.
No, I want you to. Are they good? Are you gonna lace them into the questions?
Oh, who knows? I mean, we're such broadcasting professionals. One thing I was going to mention that is kind of apropos of nothing whatsoever. It just annoyed me. So after the England's football team won in
Oh,
the
for fuck's sake. Yep, go on. This
what
pissed me off too. I know exactly what you're going to say.
quarterfinals? I thought you were saying that because it's football.
No, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Yeah, Lucy Bronze was asked. Lucy Bronze, who's like, she's won the Ballon d'Or or whatever for women. She's like one of the greatest female footballers. She's had an amazing game that game. She was asked which member of the squad would do well in Love Island, and it's just like, what year is it that we're asking those questions that you wouldn't ask men? It just pissed me off so much.
There was a headline, I'm trying to find it on the BBC about that penalty shootout. So there was a penalty shootout that went on for freaking ages. I think it was Sweden. It was England versus Sweden. I
Yeah.
loved it, right? Absolutely loved it. I was like, this is fucking brilliant. Especially when they got the goalie to take a shot. I was like, that person works in goal for a reason. They proved that. But the headlines, basically afterwards, were along the lines of, this was an embarrassment to women's sport. Because it took so long, and I went to Sunday. I can't find the headline, but it was on the BBC, and it was like, that is fucking sexist. Like,
It's
it's
terrible, isn't
just
it?
football. There can be penalty shootouts in women's football and men's football. It's not
Yeah.
because they're women that it went to a penalty shootout. It's because it's football. And it's not because they're women that it went to instant death. It's because it's football. And it's not
Instant
because they're
death.
women that they fucking, like, missed shots. It's because it's football.
Yeah, and it meant yeah, and I think this is I think it's really important because I think that we're doing so much to like highlight women's sport and to highlight the women's sport. If you look at the BBC site at the moment, they've got this whole section which is like the women's Euros. They're really, really highlighting it. It's on TV. It's the stadiums are full. It's going really well. And then at the sort of a little bit further down the food chain, still those kind of sexist attitudes exist. And I kind of think until we're able to change that, we're not going to change anything. It's undermining the kind of progress. And actually something from the world of running, unusually for us this week in this multidisciplinary episode, one of Zac Miller's crew at Hard Rock had a Here for the Women's Race t-shirt on with the WO kind of with tape over it. So it said Here for the Men's
Oh,
Race.
fuck off, you absolute
And it,
cock.
I know, and it's kind of like, haha, like he's obviously doing that as a joke, but actually, that's a really important movement and it's really undermining it. And it's really the message that sent to me was like, oh, we're paying lip service to this, but we're still the gatekeepers and you could still, you're still not as good as the men or whatever. And it just, yeah, it just absolutely boils my piss that lots of amazing things are happening at one level, but then on another level, there's still those idiots.
This BBC article has lines including the success rate is the lowest at this stage of a women's tournament in the past 15 years. And so, why are penalties now so much harder to score at major women's tournaments?
Because the goalkeepers are bigger, is that what it is? The goals
Maybe
are
if she lost
smaller.
a bit of weight, she'd be able to move quicker. Just saying. Like, honestly, more interest and greater expectations because women can't take the pressure, can they, women? Poor women with their tiny little pressure brains. Like, more interest, greater. It's just fucking football. Whether it's male or female, there is no difference in whether or not someone scores a fucking goal. There's so much. It's chance. It's fucking chance.
Yeah, it's not like the England men have ever covered themselves in glory at a penalty shootout, is it really?
No, it isn't.
Why are we
And
making this
do you know what
decision?
the best bit of that match was? It was when the goalkeeper, or the England goalkeeper, got headbutted in the face. So there's fucking blood everywhere. Blood on her gloves,
Yeah.
blood down her top, everywhere. Meanwhile, the captain is on the floor because she's also been hit in this little conumbrance with a load of KT tape taping her own
Yeah.
thigh. She's taping her own thigh, and the commentator's like, "Well, they've been taught how to do this because they don't have enough physios on the pitch, so they had to tap on and they had to get their own, they had to sort themselves out." And she's there, like fucking taping and taping. I was like, bloody hell. First off, look at her fucking quads. They're
Yeah.
incredible. And but the fucking cameraman was right up in her grill. You could basically see her bikini line. I was like, I'm not sure that you should be doing that, mate, or you wouldn't be doing it if it was a man. Secondly, can you imagine any male England footballer getting injured, then laying on the pitch and taping himself up? Because I can't. I just
No.
can't. They'd roll around like a baby until they were put into mummy's nice nappy and fucking carted off the pitch to collect their
It's coming back.
£250,000 cheque for the match they've just played.
Yeah, it's coming back to that sort of sense of entitlement, isn't it? But yeah, anyway, I think it's important to call these things out.
It is.
Go on then, questions.
This is a good question from Chloe. I love this question. I think it's brilliant. Hello, Ali and co-poddy hosts. Co-poddy hosts.
Oh,
Co-poddy hosts.
that's my new name.
Co-poddy hosts. I'm going to get a t-shirt that says co-poddy host on
I've
it.
already got one that says Bailey and Reid investigates, haven't
So
I?
can I have it back and I'll just print it on the back. Co-poddy host and then put the number 10 on it. Vic, my wife and I present two curiosities for your esteemed consideration.
Are they from Edwardian times?
Yeah, Chloe's actually gone back to Edwardian times. This is brilliant. What's the most unhinged thing you've put in your run or drop bag that you definitely didn't need but convinced yourself was vital?
Ooh. Oh God, I in my drop bag, not my bag I'm running with.
Anything that you've put in there, you're like, I need this, it's really important.
Well, I remember at the tour I was obsessed with having a stove, so that because I imagined I'd been having like all those noodles that were in my bag and like maybe some cup of soups and they'd make me some coffee and stuff and then you get to the aid station you realise they've got like a espresso maker. So yeah, I did actually get a stove and some gas across to have it driven across to Italy.
Fucking
Across the
hell.
ridge and then just driven back again. But there's got to be better stuff than that. Go on, you go and I'll think.
When I did Dragon's Back for the first time, I was obsessed with food because I'm really, really like a gannet, and I love food, and I'm like, I'm gonna be hungry. I'm gonna be so hungry, and I have this habit of getting obsessed with where I'm gonna get my food from. So the first food shop was on the Wednesday. It starts on the Monday, and the first food shop is the co-op. But I can never say it properly. Is it McKellith,
McCandless, I think it's,
McCandless? I don't want to
yeah.
swear on the
I
pot.
think that's what they call it.
All I can think about when I think about that is the bloke that kidnapped that girl and then burnt her in his fireplace. Anyway, that's back in the day. So there's a co-op there. So I was like, right, if we can get to that co-op. So I packed 6 kilograms of food.
Yeah.
6 kilograms of food. My spine bag for the Spine Summer Challenges women minor women's whiplash race didn't weigh 6 kilograms. It was nuts. It was fuck. It was nuts. It was. The each bag was like this big Ziploc bag full of fucking food.
Yeah.
So I took 6 kilograms to the race with me, and I came home with 5.5 kilograms of food because the breakfasts are massive and cooked, the dinners are massive and cooked, and then really you're only out for the day because you have to stop before it gets dark. So it's fine, but I was so frightened, and I did the same thing on the first wine race I did, and then became obsessed with getting to Gargrave Co-op by 7 o'clock when it opened, and then when I did get to Gargrave Co-op, I didn't want anything. When I did get to the co-op at McCandless, I didn't want anything. So it's food. I just fucking over, and also crystals. I will put crystals in my bag.
Okay, I think that's probably a more relevant answer.
Look, they work, so that's all right.
Yeah, I've definitely got stuff that I've had in my pack maybe for the last 10 years and then never used, but that's probably like survival blankets and stuff, fortunately.
Yeah, and that's the stuff that you're like, one day I will fucking need to use this. I can't take it out my back.
Yeah.
Have you ever made a wild ultra brain fog? Have you ever made a wild ultra brain fog mistake? Like putting lube on your face or eating a rubbish wrapper or convinced yourself that the race GPS file was wrong mid-run? What's the most nuts you've ever gone during a race?
I think we know the most nuts I've ever been during a race, but I'm not going to recount that again because it's so boring.
And also, you'll have therapy for that.
nuts, brain fog
I once
decision.
ate. I had my bag on, and I had in one pouch. I had supernatural fuel. This is when I was trying to convince myself that supernatural fuel didn't taste like the bottom of a hamster's cage. And in the other one, I had suntan lotion in one of those squeezy pouches. And I did grab the suntan lotion and just squeeze it into my mouth. And the suntan lotion, it was the same as the pHs with the lids. It's like that.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, that's absolutely rancid. Because I really went for it, and then I sort of half swallowed it by the time I realised it was suntan lotion, and it was just fucking disgusting, and I could not get the taste out of my mouth.
Oh.
Probably the most mental thing I've ever done by accident, but also some of the hallucinations I've had have just been next level awful.
Yeah, I've gone up to trees before and like touched them to see if there were people and stuff like that. And yeah, I tell you what I do more often than I'd like to admit is I get stroppy at aid stations, and so like at the weekend, the first aid station was quite busy, and there was just they have like those stone kind of stone things with a tap that you get at, like mountain refuse and stuff like that. There was one of those for everyone to fill their bottles, and I timed it took me 10 minutes to fill up a bottle.
What? 10 minutes?
Yeah, and you couldn't go without filling your bottles because it was a roasting hot day. So yeah, just stood in the queue, and every time someone tried to push in, I was like, "No, thank you. That will not be happening on my watch." And then I thought I would get like some food from the aid station, and then I realised the queue then went into the aid station. I was just like, "Fuck this!" And then half an hour later, obviously, I'm really, really regretting that decision. But I do that a lot when there's like a big queue or there's people with sharp elbows and stuff, and I just think this is everything that I hate about running. I'm not going to bother with that aid station.
Yeah, I've been asked by a rival podcast, Rivals, Young Hearts Run Free, to do a Q&A at the Lakeland races before the 50, for the 50 people to talk about the route. And I'm terrified I'm going to be like, it's fucking shit. And also, when you're coming down towards Mardale, if you think you can fucking push past 100-mile runners, you can't. Show some fucking respect. Stop being such. I just need to not do that. Because
Yeah,
that is not cool, is it?
I don't think that would be good. No.
I've got some good, exciting news about our end season guest. I tried to get David Roach, but he said that he was too busy. Honestly, I did. He said he was too busy until he says busy until August. So I was like, fine. So I've got performance in my head of the performance in mind sports psychology. What should we call it? What is it? It's a, I want to call it like a multinational corporation, but it's not. It's just her business. Josephine Perry. She's Josie Perry is an incredible human being. She's written a book called The 10 Pillars of Success. You see what I did there? And in that book, there are 10 chapters where she focuses on 10 people and talks about their ideas of success, what's been a success to them. I wanted to talk to, because we talk a lot about, I talk a lot about mindset and coaching, but I'm not a psychologist. I wanted to talk to a sports psychologist about how the ideas of success can affect performance. So we're going to talk to Josie. I'm actually talking to her this week. So when you hear this, don't send in questions because it's too late. But I will ask for questions on Instagram and I will ask her those questions. That's exciting, isn't it? She's very nice and
I'm
clever.
a massive fan of Josie. She's brilliant. I just think she's amazing. She's written some really good books, some really good articles. She does a really good podcast, and I know her a little bit through work stuff, and she always does really, really nice reviews of our books, or very thoughtful reviews of our books. She's a good human.
You have got quite a good new book out at the moment, which I have, the Jamie Doward one. Why is it what I want to call it? Why We Run, but it's not
It's
called Why
called
We Run.
And So I
And
Run.
So I Run. So that if anybody
Yeah.
enjoyed my book, which I'm sure most people did, judging by the glowing reviews, and So I Run is along the same lines, and it's a fucking great book. So you can get that from the Vertebrate website if you
It
want.
is a great book. And do you know what? Jamie is not, he's not somebody that people will know, and he is not somebody who's on Instagram.
No, that makes it difficult when you're trying to like talk about. Is because I think if people see something on Instagram, they want to go to that person, and they're not there.
But yeah, he's just not into it. And but it is like I feel like that shouldn't matter. I feel like a good book is a good book, and if people find it's an amazing book. It's about his relationship with running, and kind of how it's changed, and some of the things he's been through in his life, and how I think we've all been guilty at some point or another of using running in a really negative way, of like almost like punishing ourselves, and like you've been saying earlier, if I could achieve this time in the marathon, then everything will be okay in my life.
It's
And in the
absolutely fucking
meantime,
ridiculous. It's like saying if I get purple quality street, then I won't be miserable anymore.
And in the meantime, I'm going to go and smash the shit out of myself in pursuit of this, and then I'll feel okay for the afternoon if I've smashed myself, every lunchtime. So, and it's about how he kind of came to that realization, and how he then kind of helped himself, I guess. But it's really, really beautifully written. He's a journalist of 20 years, and he's written a few kind of thrillers as well. And I just feel quite passionately that it's a really amazing book that people would really enjoy. It's hard, it can be a bit of a hard read, but it is very funny. So I think people who enjoyed your book would enjoy this.
Also, in another book called The No Lost Causes Club. So, anybody that's interested in sobriety, that's a new book by Lauren McQuiston, and she's fucking incredible. And it is probably one of the greatest books I've ever read about sobriety because it's got things in it where I'm like, fuck, that's so true. I didn't even realize that. So I'm really enjoying that. That's a great book. And then I got home from crewing. I opened my post, and there was an Amazon delivery, and it was the Anthony Kavanagh book. If anybody who is aged, I think probably 40 or over, will remember Anthony Kavanagh from such hits as "I Can Make You Feel Good" and the other hit, "I Can Make You Feel Good." He supported Take That on tour in 1995. But the best thing about that book is what it's called:
Pop Scars.
Pop Scars. Oh,
Have you read the
so
back of a copy?
yes, I have read the back. Do you know what? Give me a minute. Just give me a
That
minute.
could be your
Give me a minute.
book.
Let's get it. I'm going to get it.
I'll just entertain the listeners now whilst Ali's just run out of her conservatory.
I've got it.
Oh, here,
Guys,
she's
I've got
back.
it.
Oh, thank God, thank God.
It's next to my bed because I've been reading it in bed.
Whoa.
Hi, I'm Anthony, but some of you may know me as that singer Kavanagh or Cav. The truth is, that wasn't really me. Not all of me, anyway. The real me was hiding my sexuality and alcoholic. Hang on a minute, it could be me. The real me was hiding my sexuality and alcoholic and desperate for approval, all while pretending to be living the dream. The very dream I'd wanted to come true my whole life. I wanted to write this book years ago, but didn't feel worthy, or more to the point, didn't have a publisher. Sorry, wasn't ready until now. So here it is, my messy, awkward, at times bonkers roller coaster ride through 90s pop, a lost decade in LA, and what really happens when the spotlight fades, but you still want to be seen. It's a story of teenage stardom, addiction, and complicated relationships, mainly the one I have with myself. There's no manual on how to deal with fame, so let me tell you what happens when the scars fade, but the past refuses to, and how, by changing the stories you believe about yourself, you can sometimes change your whole life. I don't think I need to write a second book. I think the memoir of fame, addiction, and the dark side of 90s pop, Pop Scars by Anthony Kavanagh, I think that's the book.
Yeah.
I've only read the first chapter, but it's very badly written. I'm so be excited to read the rest of it.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
basically like reading a massive copy of Now magazine. There's a chapter called the flop era.
Oh, he did a PA when I worked at, I think it was at Birmingham High Street, HMV, did a PA there.
What happened?
Nothing much turned up.
Many people came?
Loads. He was super popular, wasn't he, in like early mid-90s?
Yeah, he was. Oh my God, look how many chapters there are. There is like 100 chapters.
Maybe he only writes really short ones.
I think he does. He's got curtain. The back picture. Just go and get the book because the pictures on the back cover are incredible. Go buy
Yeah, buy
Jamie's
that.
book, go buy Laura's book, and go buy fucking
Yeah.
Kavanagh's book.
Just to be clear, we didn't publish Kavanagh's book.
No, we didn't. Who did publish it? Bonnier Books. Bonnier Books. Lovely.
Yeah.
Blink. I don't know. What is that? Anyway, it's a hard copy book. I love you. Thanks for doing the series with me.
Okay.
We are taking suggestions for the next series. You can suggest what you want. I've already decided what the theme is, but I'm not going to tell you. And I will be at Lakeland this weekend. So if it's Saturday and you're at Lakeland, then I will also be somewhere around, hanging around, having a nice time. And I'll see you. I'll be around on Sunday morning. People will come say hello. And that's that.
Okay,
I love
bye.
you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Running Won't Save You podcast. If you have got 2 seconds, or maybe a bit longer, maybe a minute, can you head over to Apple or Spotify and give us 5 stars, please? We don't want to hear all the things you don't like about the pod, just the good stuff. We'd also encourage you, while you're on the internet, to go and check out Reaction Collective. Reaction Collective are a collective of wonderful human beings who are striving to make things a little bit better environmentally for everybody. They fix everything from tents to t-shirts, and they have an amazing collective. So go to have a look at Reaction Collective, Google it, you'll find it. Pre-Love Sports. We also support them. Pre-Love Sports sell secondhand kit, and they collect good quality secondhand kit to sell on as well, which encourages the circular economy of running. Into Ultra are an amazing charity who help people getting into the sport because it is very expensive, as we all know. So they're a great company to be part of, great charity to get involved with. Just Google Into Ultra to see how you can help. And finally, our favourites, the Green Runners. If you're not a member of the Green Runners, then why the hell aren't you? It's easy to pledge. It's only £2.50 a year, and you can wear the same badge as Jasmine Paris, so a bit of virtue signalling. Thanks to all of our friends, and thanks to you, the listener. We will see you next week.